As voice of Chiefs Kingdom, he's seen the lowest of lows and the highest of highs.
You can doubt the Chiefs. You can dislike the Chiefs. You can disrespect the Chiefs. You're going to have to deal with the Chiefs.
Your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan. Here's Mitch Holthus with CDOT on The Drive.
Mitch Holthus is here, and his appearance on The Drive is presented by Silverstein Eye Center. Achieve your best vision and experience outstanding patient care at Silverstein Eye Center. Also by GEHA. GEHA is a proud partner of the Kansas City Chiefs. Mitch, there is so much to get into. The Chiefs have finally lost a regular season game. I don't want to make it seem like, woe is me. I thought this team was going to lose a couple of times this year. I know we were having the undefeated conversation, but that's really the only thing that ended yesterday. This is just going to be your run-of-the-mill team that wins 14 or 15 games this year.
Well, and tighten the gap for the race for the one seed. It did that, obviously. But, yeah, it's kind of weird. First time in 11 months. We've talked about a loss on a Monday, but heck of a game, entirely expected, something like that. I knew like any turnover in that game was going to be magnified, and that first turnover was like, okay, that kind of set the tone for the rest of the game. There was still a chance to win the game. There were two possessions, the ones I earmarked in the second half, possession 6 and 7, after the defense got a 3 and out, then got sacked, couldn't move, but then got another stop, and that's one that went toward midfield. Then the hold took him out. Even a field goal to go up 17-16 mid-third kind of changes the vibe of the game, maybe, as it moves on from there. But, yeah, there was a chance to win that game.
So there's a lot to get into. So the lead of the show earlier was, I think this loss is maybe a little bit more on the defense than the offense, and their past three games, they've had a pretty big defensive stop where – over the last, you know, year and a half, their defenses really performed well in those moments. Against Tampa Bay, Baker Mayfield had the ball with 2 minutes to go. You got to score a touchdown to send that game to overtime. Baker Mayfield goes down the field. Now, special teams put you in a bad spot for the final drive against the Broncos, but Bo Nix took them down the field, had them at a chance at a 35-yard field goal to win the game. Special teams bailed you out. They blocked it. I mean, Buffalo got the ball with a one-possession lead with 8 minutes to go. The only thing you couldn't do was let them score a touchdown there. Even if you let them kick a field goal, you give the ball back to the offense with 3 minutes and 30 seconds to go. You all feel confident, especially after the last drive that the offense had. That might have been the best Mahomes drive we've seen this season. They were surgical on that drive, and I think we all wanted to see the offense get one more chance. I probably put this loss a little bit more on the defense and not being able to get that final stop than the offense.
Yeah, I mean, the way the team is, they take it all on. I know it sounds cliche, but this has never been, since Andy Reid's been here, and especially with Andy Reid / Patrick Mahomes, ever been a finger pointing. The Hollins, I wrote down the Hollins 15-yarder on that one. That was a big play where you could have got a stop and get the ball. You're saying, like I was thinking, of get the ball back down two and go kick a field goal, because I think our new field goal kicker might have hammered one from 50 the way he was kicking it.
Those extra points, he was incredible.
Yeah, they were like upper deck.
Yeah.
So it was, at some point, there's got to get a pass rush with four. Because when you face a good quarterback, I mentioned it several times during the broadcast, and Dana and I talked about it. Josh Allen's QBR against a blitz all year long has been 126.8. I mean, that's valedictorian. So you're not going to get to him necessarily with the blitz, and the Chiefs have been so good at blitzing, at getting off the field or making the play to get the stop, that if you can't get pressure with four, then all of a sudden, obviously, you know, you're being exposed. You can, if you have a quarterback that finds the hot receiver, which is what Mayfield did, Nix did to some extent, but Josh Allen was doing it all day long. It's what we see Pat doing in his sleep. So at some point, you're going to have to get pressure with four to get off the field. The other big nonstop was when they had, and the game could have completely flipped, third down and 9 back at the 18 and the DPI on Shamari Connor. That was an enormous play. And because that also is a 21-yard defensive pass interference penalty, but you would have got him off the field deep in their own territory. You're going to have good field position and a chance to seize the game at that point. So, yeah, when there's a game like that, it felt like a playoff game, and there's 5 or 6 key points that could have flipped the game in the Chiefs' favor.
there's a lot of the same pieces in the pass rush, yet they are not getting similar production from last year. They were second in the NFL on sacks. Only the Ravens had more sacks. They are currently 27th in the stat or in the sacks category. What have you noticed with the pass rush? You mentioned the ability to get home with just four. What's so drastically different from what you're seeing from this pass rush from last year to this year?
Well, even though those sacks last year, you got to look at how many of those sacks were because of a blitz. This is the Chiefs are the best corner slot blitzing team in the NFL. And when you get a Trent McDuffie going, I've often said this, and I talked to Dana about this yesterday, he rushes a quarterback like a speed rusher. Like, he doesn't go too fast, too slow. He's just so his target point. He looks like a speed rusher. But so a lot of those sacks last year were also the result of blitz packages. You just have to win with four. What am I seeing as a difference? It's a matter of, and I think the injury to Jalen Watson always moves everybody down one. I mean, we saw a pressure and a blitz, a sack against Bo Nix in the game against Denver, I believe it was, where it was Nazi Johnson that came on the corner blitz. It's a matter of winning off the edges, I think, and maybe winning on some twists. Getting Mike Dana back and up and healthy should help. Needs Felix to make a play or two. Made a good one yesterday. His plays have been in the run game, but there has to be some, and you got to get Chris Jones to be explosive at some point. But you're going to have to get pressure over these next 7 weeks with four some. Especially against the really good quarterbacks. And I was looking already at the Panthers. If you look at Young, he was brutal against the blitz in the start of the season and really at the last year. But over his last three games, he's been remarkably improved there. Markedly, I should say, improved. So Bryce Young isn't necessarily going to cave under a blitz this week.
Are you surprised that Josh Oche didn't play a whole lot? Every defensive player played more than he did. You know I'm big on the snap counts. I mean, they had 73 defensive snaps. He only got on the field for five of them. That's a guy that you brought him in here for his ability to get to the quarterback, not really asking him to help you stop the run, not asking him to cover. It is just put your finger in the dirt and go get after the quarterback. I would have liked to see some more opportunities and snaps from him yesterday.
Yeah, I don't have a great answer for that. That would be one to be with Joe Cullen or Spags and see what he would say and a worthy question later in the week. I would say that maybe you're so concerned about Josh Allen running the ball. It's not just teeing off and getting back to his back point. So if I had to rationalize it in some way, it would be that. But I don't have an awesome answer for that. And then getting Mike Dan on the field, back on the field to get more snaps will take snaps away from someone. And maybe that's where the Joshua Uche snaps went.
How have you seen Josh Allen grow over your broadcasting him? Because we're talking about a guy that came into the league pretty raw out of Wyoming, struggled with accuracy issues the first couple of years. I think right now he's playing the best of any quarterback in the league. I still think Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league, but it's hard to deny what we've seen so far from Allen. I think he's the favorite to an NFL MVP. How have you seen him grow in the past couple of years?
I guess become a mixture of when do I run and when do I throw, because we know he's so devastating as a runner. But it's his recognition, his ability to see things faster, process it faster. Mahomes could do it almost from the beginning, where if you said, people have to be really careful if they blitz Mahomes. Just look at the game where Denver was doing such a great job of containing the offense, but then they sent a corner blitz. He immediately reads it, finds D-Hop for 31. It's just the immediate recognition that sets apart the really good to great quarterbacks from the also-rans. And I think Josh Allen over time, C-Dot, has grown into just recognizing it faster. He's seeing his hot read quicker. It's not just bail out and take off and run, because he knows he can do that and probably get 7 yards anytime he wants. But he's turning into a complete quarterback. I thought he was spectacular yesterday.
Right now, we're talking to Mitch Holtz, voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. His appearance is presented by Silverstein Eye Center, also GEHA. Let's talk about the offense. Let's talk about, I don't know if controversial play is the right way to call it, but Mahomes had Xavier Worthy down the field. Some people think he could have made a better throw. Maybe you can argue that Mahomes should throw a little bit better ball and they score a touchdown. To me, there's no reason why that ball should be an incompletion. I think if we've seen just a little bit of youth and an experience from Xavier Worthy, is you just got to have a better feel around the sideline. That's been a catch at every other level of football that you've played in your career. That's not a catch in the National Football League. You got to figure out a way to get those 2 feet down, continue the drive, and push the ball downfield. That's one place that I like to see him improve. What did you see from that play? Because you got the up top view. You have one of the best views in the stadium for a play like that.
When I saw the ball, I see him wide open. So my voice level starting to rise. But then I see the ball kind of drifting to the sideline, and I was going back and thinking of the play earlier this year, and I'm thinking, man, he's going to have to drag the toe on this. He's going to have to drag the toe. And then I see he didn't, and I'm just hoping that he got two inbounds because I can't see it that up close right away like a replay. And then I saw Buffalo's sideline react right away. You've gone to practices. You've seen it. And I actually get into this tonight with Andy Reid. We recorded it earlier today. But when you go to a practice field, if fans go to St. Joseph and watch practice, you will see a red line between – it basically is another line of demarcation between the sideline, the numbers, the hash, the numbers, the sideline. That's what we see in every game. When you go to an NFL practice, including this week, you will see another line of demarcation, which is between the numbers and the boundary, which is a red line. And I get in tonight – with coach of asking about that red line, because that becomes part of the answer to your question. And that is for where a defender normally is going to be placed, even I don't care if they're man or zone, they're not going to be out of bounds. But that red line to boundary becomes a brand new area and how you have to handle that as a receiver. And that's a learning curve for Xavier Worthy, for any college receiver. You know, they have Xavier Leggett on this team coming up, and the Chiefs were looking at him, kind of the new Debo Samuel type. But I don't care who you are, whether you played at South Carolina or Texas, is that the toe drag becomes second nature. It's a reflex instead of a college game where that's a catch in college. So, It's becoming a red line receiver is what I would call it. And that is understanding the microscopic area that you have between the numbers and boundary. That is that red line where that ball is going to be placed to the red line or outside by an accurate quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, because you want to keep it away from the defender. And so it has to become like brushing your teeth for a receiver. And we see the great ones do it. Like D-Hop doesn't have to think about it. Right, or Kels. I mean, the toe drag is part of their life.
That just seems like such a natural evolution from him. The play that you're thinking about, I believe it was against Tampa Bay, where he's kind of like backing up in that scenario. That can't be an incompletion there. You have to catch that ball inbounds and turn it into a play. And I think this was the same thing. There's just no reason for that play to turn into.
You're talking 90 yards on two plays. Those two plays would equal 90 yards. So, yeah, I interrupted you, but
No, perfectly fine. No, I just, that's...
Same play, same kind of play.
Yeah, that's just red where, like, if you're saying is, hey, a young guy, where do you need to improve? Where's the evolution? We saw Rashee Rice really start to improve the second half of the year and really start to figure some things out and get better as a route runner. Like, how Xavier Worthy can help this team is just a little bit of the nuance, a little bit of the football IQ goes a long way. That's a big play in the game. A 40-yard play sets you up in field goal range. You score a touchdown on that drive. That changes the math in these games.
Some guys never get it, though. Remember Dwayne Bowden drag his toe against the Colts all the way back in that 2013 wildcard game where the Chiefs lost the lead. If he does, I think they're going to kick a field goal and win the game. But it's something to work on if you're Xavier Worthy. So the fact that you don't think about it, it's just your reflex.
I felt that Buffalo ran a lot of man where they usually don't run man, and that was one way they were able to kind of take out Kelsey. Like, I think Kelsey is still elite at finding holes in the zone, kind of sitting there, patting him, have that kind of relationship where he's going to find him. I thought Buffalo did a really good job of just kind of manning up against Kelsey and just kind of lining up against him and just not letting him really run free on Sunday.
I would say, based on what I saw, because I can't watch this closely when I do play-by-play, I'm following the ball, but I watched it this morning because I was really interested what did they do to not only hold down Kelsey but D-Hop. Because those two only had five combined catches for 30-some yards, and look what happened in the two games prior to that. It was really like a matchup zone in basketball. This was a man-zone combo, and they would play man in certain areas on certain guys in certain areas. Really well done. And then some guys would be zone. Like Terrell Bernard looked like he was spying Mahomes most of the time, but then he would turn his shoulders and go into zone. But they were bracketing a lot of times Kelsey, not all the time, but sometimes, and sometimes they'd start a bracket and then go, man, it was a great concept. I really think because they're a basic nickel defense as their base. Tyron Johnson's good, number seven. They are not very good against the run if Milano's out. They're really good against the pass. Because what I saw when I reviewed the video that I didn't see during the game was just how quick they were. Great scheme, matchup zone, man-zone combos, and then also their quickness. I thought they were very quick to the ball and in coverage yesterday.
I'll give you another snap count number with DeAndre Hopkins. The Chiefs had 55 offensive plays. D-Hop was on the field for 26 of them. That's good for 47%. It feels to me they are being a little bit conservative with D-Hop and just trying to get him to the finish line, that they're going to unleash him. I mean, he played the third most wide receiver snaps in the game. Worthy was on the field more than him, and Justin Watson was on the field more than him. I think most people think that D-Hop's their best receiver. He's a guy who could potentially go into Canton. If we're looking at potential a couple of fixes, that what are the Chiefs going to look like a month from now? I think Isaiah Pacheco is going to be back for a month. I think you will get a better version of Juju Smith-Schuster than you got in this game. And also, I mean, just D-Hop, his usage is going to go up. He's going to go from being on the field for 47% of the snaps for 77% of the snaps, and that's going to drastically change this offense as well.
I think it's part of a protection. It's opponent-specific because there was so much concern about Rousseau and Epinesa yesterday on the outside. And some teams are going to be like this that we're going to face in the future, but that dictates your personnel. But you also still want to have some speed. It's why Xavier Worthy was getting targets early in the game, because I can play 12 personnel, but I still need a way to pop you deep and put a threat in there. Justin Watson and Xavier Worthy are the two guys, because D-Hop can do it, but he's not going to be it all the time, right? Those days are gone. But the fact that you have to protect to get those plays, or you're in 12 personnel with two tight ends. Look what Noah Gray did yesterday. I mean, Noah Gray's growing into being a factor as well. But I think it's opponent specific, and it's about protection and the foe that you have and how quickly they could get to the quarterback, and that will dictate who you have in your receiving core and what play your play calls are.
Right now, we're joined by Mitch Holtz, his voice of the Chiefs. His appearances are brought to you by Silverstein Eye Center, also GEHA, a proud partner of the Kansas City Chiefs. I want to get your thoughts on two trouble spots right now with the offense. Kingsley Suamataia, we go from week one, you are the starter to this team, to yesterday getting a healthy DMP and a scratch. What do you make of their left tackle situation right now? And there's a little bit of speculation that Donovan Smith could be coming back. I certainly would like a little bit of break in case of emergency. If an injury happens to Wanya Morris over the next few weeks or so, it'd be good to have a veteran in the fold.
Have you seen I don't know. Have we seen Donovan lately? Is he in good shape?
I don't know where he is.
Well,
Donovan.
I remember seeing him at LaGuardia in the summer after we just had signed him, and I had to go to New York for a wedding. And I go, man, that's Donovan Smith. Hey, bro. But he's got some friends or family, I think, in that area, New York Giants. But still, what kind of shape's he in? I mean, is he just, you say break in case of fire, is he just rolling out there like ready to go? Or is it going to take a while to ramp him up? I don't know. And I thought Wanya had some good snaps yesterday. The hold was rough to get that hold at that spot. That's a big penalty. Something I talk about with Coach Reed tonight, the Chiefs are the second fewest penalties. That was a bit of an anomaly yesterday with six penalties in that game. Only one team's been penalized less than the Chiefs, but when they happen. And, man, that hold, they're gone to the 14 to the midfield, and that's where you can take the lead and maybe swing that game, and, ooh, the hold just sets you back. And as Andy Reid will explain tonight, really fascinating, takes plays off your chart. But you hope Wanya can hold the fort and do his thing. With Suamataia, it's a matter, I think, of kind of back to the drawing board, getting back, you know, get his feet underneath him and try to get some of his confidence back.
Mitch, the one spot that I think the injuries have maybe hurt this team the most, and you alluded to it earlier, has probably been in that cornerback room. Got all the confidence in the world with Trent McDuffie. He's one of the top five corners in the National Football League. It's been a little bit of a revolving door kind of on that other side after the Jalen Watson injury. What do you make of that cornerback room? Who do you feel comfortable, I guess, moving forward with as this team continues to kind of grow and get more experience with the corners?
Well, you see Nazi Johnson grow and get more experience. Remember, he missed all of last year. And so for him to get more reps and time, and then he got injured a couple weeks ago, and I thought, ugh. But then he came back, and you can see the difference. But C-Dot, that the subtle difference in is it changes your dime packages, it changes your If you have to go seven DBs, sometimes you do. It changes special teams. Now Keith Taylor's got to be your gunner on punt cover as opposed to Nazi Johnson because you had Jalen Watson in there before. So it affects a lot of different things if you get just one corner injury like that. But I think Nazi's winning his share of battles. Now, they're going after him. They're going after him on some deep plays. But the other thing I see on the defense is the linebackers and coverage. Teams are trying to influence. Yesterday, the Bills went with a heavy package with an extra offensive lineman. We threw to Caliendo once, too, but they were throwing deep passes, trying to get the Chiefs into base and then using routes to get influence who they would have cover those second to third level routes and gain an advantage that way. They did it early in the game. I'm going to ask Leo about it tonight. Leo Chenal is the guest tonight over at Mission at Hy-Vee here just over across the street. But I'm going to ask him about that and just how they do that when they're in base with the coverages and how they handle that. But just like one corner injury can influence a whole bunch of different things.
I was just going to ask you who was on the Chiefs Kingdom show. Now, I know last week you had Travis Kelce, but, you know, he's going to be a hit regardless. You should have swapped him out. You should have had Leo last week on the Chiefs Kingdom show. Line would have been out the door.
I don't care who you voted for president. If it was 1 week later and you ran Travis Kelce and Chenal as vice president, you're going to win a 98% of the vote. Leo right now is on top of the world, and he's played awesome football. It started last year, see it out in the playoffs. Remember poking the ball out from CMC in Super Bowl 58, but it was even before that. And before the knock on him was, you can't cover. Tonight we'll get into it. He mentioned we had him on Defending the Kingdom last week, too, with the podcast that Matt Ramolin and I do. He was told by a general manager, you will never cover in the National Football League. You're just so limited. And when he covered Kyle Juszczyk on the deep pass and knocked it down 30 yards down the field. Now, they got him yesterday. They got him on a deep throw yesterday. But that conversation will be worthy of a listen of how Leo has grown and where he's at in his career and the confidence that he's playing with, not just in the run game, violence and physicality on Draft Fest that Kelce mentioned on New Heights this week, but also his ability to cover down the field and up the field, whatever. The point is they're going to have to do that because more and more teams are going to get in base personnel, force you into three linebackers, and then try to throw at those linebackers at the second or maybe the third level and influence the route concept to where those backers have to cover.
That is Mitch Holtz, his voice of the Kansas City Chiefs, joining us on the show. His appearances are brought to you by Silverstein Eye Center. Achieve your best vision and experience outstanding patient care. And also by GEHA, who they are a proud partner of the Kansas City Chiefs. Got the Chiefs Kingdom show coming up. You can hear from Andy Reid, also Leo Chenal. That's at the one right around the corner, right? The one
right
over
here,
there,
man. Home game for you.
Hey,
you
might as well come game. Up. Yeah, I got to come by.
I got to come by
and see Leo. I got to get him to sign something.
A little sandwich and see Leo the Lion, man. It's like, what's up, Leo? Grantsburg, Wisconsin. Population 1,338.
There's nobody that just knows more small town America knowledge than Mitch Holtis.
It's small town America, baby. It's the heartbeat of America. I love these small town. You always hear me mention these NFL small town guys. There were some yesterday. Well, Spencer Brown didn't play. He's from Lenox, Iowa, which is right on the Missouri Iowa border, man. Fireworks. You can get all kinds of fireworks. All right. In Lenox, Iowa. This dude played 8-man football. And he's like 330 pounds. He was on the golf team. Can you imagine a 330-pound offensive tackle on the golf team? But these small-town guys I like to mention, who was it? Oh, Tampa Bay had Cody Mock, who's the big, long, red-headed dude, right guard. He's got no teeth, no front teeth, but he's got big, long, red hair. He's from a town of like 500 people. And he's in the National Football League as a starting lineman for the Buccaneers. There's all kinds of those stories. But Leo, he's ours.
That is Mitch Holtz's voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about a major change with the defense this year. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. On your new home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
I want to give you guys a stat really quickly. A stat that is something that we should maybe keep an eye on. Now, yesterday, I think we saw that the Chiefs pass rush is a little skimpy in some spots. And this team could desperately use the return of Charles Omenihu. Now, I think he is coming back sooner rather than later. Maybe he plays against Carolina at the latest. I think he plays against Las Vegas on Black Friday. So a significant part of their pass rush is returning. And then everybody else just kind of falls in line. He gobbles up some of those snaps. You put Mike Dana maybe in a role that he is better suited. Felix Onyedike. You get Josh Oche a little bit more experience in this defense, and you can expand his role a little bit. I think some of the defensive, I guess, pressure issues are solvable. But it has been noticeable. Let me give you guys a stat. Last year, the Chiefs were second in the NFL in sacks. The Chiefs had 57 sacks. Baltimore had 60. Rob, so far this season, the Chiefs have 19 sacks this year, and they are 27th in the NFL in sacks. You want to know one thing that we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, and I get it with how the Chiefs were undefeated? They really miss Snead. And they don't miss Snead as much maybe in the coverage aspect, and we can talk about some of the youth, but I'm hopeful that with more experience, more time, you can kind of find and develop one of those corners to be a solid number two, because right now the Chiefs do not have a great number two option. They had one with Jalen Watson. He got injured, and now between Joshua Williams, Nazi Johnson, Roland Wallace, they do not have a great number two corner option, but you still got time to figure that out. I think what Snead provided you last year was options and flexibility. You could blitz Trent McDuffie because you felt really comfortable about one side of the field because you had Snead there. You could send Snead on a blitz because you felt really good about McDuffie and then Watson as your number three. As you've lost that, and I think some of your ability to kind of scheme up some things, I mean, it's showing right there in the number. Rob, if they're at 17 right now, where do you think they end up at? Like, what do you think the last number, or 19, where do you think they end up on sacks? I mean, it's only a handful of teams that don't have double-digit sacks, or 20 sacks at this point. It's the Cowboys, the Titans, the Bengals, the Ravens. Teams that we think have bad defenses. That's not really what we think about Kansas City. I mean, right now, first is the Broncos. I mean, the Broncos have almost 20 more sacks than the Chiefs have, almost double the amount that they have. If you want to look at why this cornerback room is potentially struggling the way that they are, is you have drastically changed their pass rush. And that pass rush last year really helped elevate your corners. You're not asking your corners to do as much. You don't have to send as much pressure. You were getting pressure with your front four, and it allowed you to do some different things on the back end to maybe make up for some of the talent that you didn't have. You don't really have that right now. If you're not getting home and they weren't getting home yesterday against Josh Allen, it creates a lot of one-on-one scenarios with Nazi Johnson. It creates a lot of opportunities for Chamari Connor, creates a lot of opportunities for Joshua Williams. And if you want to find where Buffalo really exploited Kansas City's defense, it was in their secondary, and they really took advantage of either A, their lack of pass rush, or the inexperience that they have in the secondary.
I think last year the Chiefs, because as you and Mitch were talking, and you mentioned that pass rush stat, I was thinking to myself, I don't think the Chiefs are blitzing more this year than they did last year. I don't have the numbers in front of me, a blitz rate or whatever, but it feels like Spag is still dialing it up at the same level. And then I kind of sat back here and pondered and came to the conclusion, man, last year when Spags dialed it up, you know what happened? You'd have Karloftis one-on-one, and Karloftis was winning more often than not last year. You'd have Chris Jones against a guard, and it was like Collinsworth or Aikman or Romo, be like, oh, that poor guy has no chance. Chris Jones is still doing that. Chris Jones is still winning his matchups, and Spag is still doing a good job of creating blitz packages that lead to those one-on-one matchups. But George Karloftis is not having as good of a season this year as he did last year. He is not a bad player. I don't want to say regressed, but he's not on par with what he was last year. No disrespect to Mike Dana, Felix Onyedike Uzomah. They aren't at the same level that Charles Omenihu was last year. Now, Omenihu's coming back, but he also had ACL surgery, under a year ago? So we'll see what he is. They didn't play Josh Oche enough, to get to know if they do or don't have something there, but it feels like when Spags goes to those slot corner blitzes that Mitch was talking about, or he brings pressure, it's not designed just to get free rushers, the guy blitzing. It's designed to get a one-on-one with someone, and no one on the Chiefs D-line outside of number 95 is winning. George Karloff is supposed to gobble up sacks this year. He ain't gobbling up sacks. Honestly, the one play Karloff I remember from the game on Sunday is when he got pushed inside, which let Josh Allen escape out the side. That they're just not getting enough from the four, and it's starting to show because now when you lose those one-on-ones, Allen or whoever can stand back there, and they are good enough to pick you apart.
Yeah, I think that was very apparent, everything you just said on that final drive of the game, that I believe the Chiefs tried a lot of different things to get home. And I think that Buffalo is just talented enough that they could kind of find some weaknesses. Like, people are kind of mad. Hey, how can you not have a spy? How could you not send pressure? Like, you kind of got to protect for everything. Like, there's going to be a weakness. Sure, if you're going to put a couple of spies on Josh Allen for that fourth down run play that he scored the touchdown on, then how are you going to cover the tight ends? And we know that that's an area that this defense is pretty weak on. I think a majority of their defensive problems right now, so to speak, just come from that. That's a drastic difference with your defense. To go from second in the NFL at sacks and getting pressure to now 27th, that's a drastic difference. And where is that production going to come from? And I also think it's important to note that they didn't have Charles Omenihu for great portions of last year either. It's not like you got 17 games from Charles Omenihu. The major difference with their pass rush is not having Snead. And this team has been really good over the past few years or so with Spags as a defensive coordinator about kind of jittering that pass rush out of nowhere. How many times have we seen Snead or McDuffie come off the corner and just catch the offense off guard because you could kind of scheme a pressure up that way? I don't know if Spags maybe trusts this team to do that, or if you're going to get to that corner blitz and it doesn't get home, you're going to have some inexperienced guys trying to cover one-on-one, and I don't know if that's what the Chiefs want to do down the field either.
And I remember this, we talked about this a few years ago. I believe it was 2021. If it's not, correct me if I'm wrong. Do you remember Bink had that stat? Bink loved this stat. The Chiefs led the NFL in sacks from guys in the secondary. That was a stat that I remember Bink said a lot. And I remember the time thinking, well, that means their front four isn't doing a good enough job. And that means their front four isn't getting home enough. And that means Spags has to dial it up to get pressure, which is a sign of a problem. Because if you block it up, now you're in trouble on the backside. And that, I think, is what you're experiencing this year. Spags is dialing up all the same stuff. Go get him. Hey, Trent McDuffie was on a blitz yesterday. Nick Bolton's blitzing a lot more this year than I believe in the past. Drew Tranquil's coming. Leo Chenal, obviously, is a pass rush type of linebacker. The problem is, I think he has to because the front four can't do it. And on first and 10, if you're passing, you have time to get 6 yards. And if you get 6 yards, that just changes the whole view of a drive.
Coming up on the other side, let's do this, Rob. Let's talk a little bit about Netflix coming up. So we'll just have the entire 5 o'clock hour be about the Chiefs and the Bills. I do want to give you guys my thoughts on the fight that we saw this weekend. Also, Netflix's, I don't know about you, I am very much worried about their ability to give us a good stream for the NFL. And they are about 5 weeks away from Chiefs and Steelers, which we thought that this game was pretty important between the Chiefs and the Bills. And it absolutely was. The game for the one seed might actually be on Christmas Day between the Chiefs and the Steelers, and they got it terribly wrong on Friday. They cannot get it that wrong again coming up in a few weeks. We'll talk about it next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get back to Chiefs and Bills, the biggest game so far in the NFL. We'll talk about Xavier Worthy, the pass from Patrick Mahomes. We'll talk about the defense. There's a lot to get into from the game, but I do want to give you guys my thoughts on what we saw on Friday. Now, Netflix is saying that the stream peaked at 65 million people. I find that a little bit hard to believe that we think as many people watch the Jake Paul and Mike Tyson fight that watch the AFC Championship game. But who am I to argue with Netflix's number? But we do know that a lot of people tuned in and the stream could not handle all of the service. Now, I understand that we all have different internet, but for the most part, it's 2024. We all got good internet, right? Everybody's bills around the same. We all got good internet. It was not working for me. It got so bad, I had to pull it up on the illegal stream. And the illegal stream was working better than the Netflix stream in the house. Now, I don't have to tell you guys that the Chiefs, they have a game coming up on Netflix in like a month. A pretty important game. A game that could decide who the one seed is. Pittsburgh is actually kind of good. They just beat Baltimore. They only have two losses. They're one game back at Kansas City, and they play Kansas City. There is still an outside shot that Pittsburgh ends up hosting the AFC Championship game. So this is something that they're going to have to get right. Now, what frustrated me the most, Rob, it was actually with a couple of things. I don't want to say frustrated me the most. Let's go through the things that frustrated me, period. Number one, the stream. It was bad. It didn't work. I'm not saying it didn't work for some of you guys. It didn't work for me and a lot of other people. And Netflix is usually pretty reliable. I don't have too many issues with Netflix. We all are streaming television at this point. YouTube TV, humming. It works. For whatever reason, it wasn't working this time. So that's number one. Number two, Rob, is the production of this thing. Why is Rosie Perez on the call? I love Rosie Perez. I want her on the call of a sporting event? No. If you want to go to her in the crowd and ask her, hey, what it's like to be here, and we get a little Rosie Perez, that's fine. Netflix wants us to take them seriously as a live streaming service. Well, your first, foray into this thing, it went about as poorly as it could go. The stream didn't work. The production was bad. The event was bad. I mean, you struck out. Strike one, strike two, strike three on this thing. The fight was boring, and the stream didn't work for the fight. Now, the other thing here is, y'all really thought Mike was going to win that fight? Come on now. Some of you, I know you thought Mike was going to win that fight. Mike Tyson fought exactly how I thought it was going to go. He fought exactly how I thought it was going to go. You know what he fought like? An old man. That's what he looked like to me. An old man. He looked like somebody that was simply trying to get through the next 20 minutes to make sure that that check cashed. I don't want to get hit. I don't want to do anything that puts me at any risk of an injury. I'm trying to stay up on my 2 feet. I'm trying to get through the next 8 rounds of this thing at 2 minutes apiece, and I'm going to collect my $20 million. Mike did his role exactly. You know what Mike's role was? To smack Jake Paul during the weigh-in. That was as fast as I saw Mike move all weekend. He smacked him, and he still had that face, and boy, it had you sold. Hey, man, Mike might actually have a little something left in the tank. This whole fight was about two things. This fight was about, does Mike have a little bit magic left in those gloves, and America's desire to see somebody beat Jake Paul. Now, Rob, I'm going to admit something here, and I hate doing this. You're my brother, you know that, but I hate doing this. I think you might have been right. I am at the end of my interest in Jake Paul. I've seen you do this magic trick enough. I've seen it enough. Either fight I'm not saying you even got to fight a great boxer. I'm not saying you got to fight Canelo or somebody. That's way past your skill level. I would like to see him actually fight somebody that I think can box. I would. Doesn't have to be somebody that we even know at this point. Like, I think Jake really wants us to take him seriously. Maybe I'm falling for the con, too, that Jake doesn't care if we take him seriously because the check continues to clear. That's perfectly fine, but at this point, if he's not going to fight a very serious fighter, the only person I'm interested in watching Jake Paul fight is Conor McGregor. If he's not going to fight Conor McGregor, no thank you. I'm not interested in watching you fight another YouTuber. I don't want to see you fight your brother. I don't want to see you fight any more of these. I've seen you do this now 4 or 5 times, and you did it against Mike Tyson. You got us all to tune in the one time. We watched it. Okay, fine. I'm not tuning in to watch Jake Paul do that again. So I'm just going to guess that Jake Paul has more than a one-fight deal with Netflix. I don't think that was a one-off. I think Jake Paul's next fight is going to be on Netflix. If he's not interested in fighting somebody that actually boxes for a living, I'm cool. I'm done watching him. I'm finally out. It took me a while. It took me a couple of years. But, Rob, I think I'm officially done watching Jake Paul fight.
Haven't we seen him fight a person that's a good boxer, but we don't know their name, and then he get whooped? Was it Tommy Fury?
Yeah, he lost.
You don't... I don't... The only reason I know Tommy Fury's name is because it's A, close to Tyson Fury, so I connected two dots, and two, he's the guy that beat Jake Paul. Jake Paul will continue to have no interest in being an actual boxer. We saw in the lead up to this fight, beyond the Tyson slap that was trying to sell and hype up the fight.
Oh, they did it.
Do you know what else he kept getting asked in these press conferences? Hey, when are you going to fight a real fighter? And he kept saying, oh, you're making fun of Mike Tyson. Oh, I think you call Mike Tyson a fake fighter? He kept answering. He asked the question three or four different times, and he deflected every single time. You want to know why? He's more interested in fighting Lennox Lewis than he is anyone in his weight class and his age because he is a gimmick. And that's fine. People watch, people tune in. He has a major YouTube following. He's going to have a very nice life with a lot of money being a gimmick. But I don't think he wants us to take him seriously because he has no interest in being taken seriously. Because the one time he dipped his toe into the serious water, he got whooped by an actual boxer.
No, he did. So we'll see what happens with Jake Paul's career. I imagine he will fight again in 2025. It'll probably be some nonsense. That's what I'm guessing. Jake Paul says he wants to fight Canelo. If I'm Canelo, you know how I'm not fighting Jake Paul. I'm Canelo. I've fought the best. I might be the best boxer in the world. Why don't you fight a regular fighter? Just a regular fighter. Somebody on Top Rank. Just fight somebody with a little bit of boxing chops. That's it. I don't know why we have to jump from you were fighting 58-year-old Mike Tyson and now you get to fight Canelo Alvarez, who might be the best boxer in the world. No, fight a regular person. That's all we want. That's it. I'll watch that fight. I'll pay to watch Jake Paul fight a regular person. But goodness, I watched you fight. You've either fought never was washed up UFC fighters or somebody who can get a discount at Denny's. I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore. No, thank you. Coming up, we'll get to Chiefs and Bills. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.